And good evening. Welcome aboard. We are up and running. It is Rob Breckenridge, The World Tonight. Welcome to the program on this Friday evening. The telephone number is always 974-8255. You can reach us toll-free, 1-800-563-7770. In Iraq, meantime, and maybe this will prove an issue for NATO, as NATO member Turkey has pushed into northern Iraq to deal with elements of the Kurdish Workers' Party, the PKK, which Turkey considers a terrorist organization. Now, while that may be adding to the instability in Iraq, on the stability side, Muqtada al-Sadr and his Mahdi army have extended their ceasefire by another 6 months. So as things begin to move in the right direction, I think that was certainly welcome news in many quarters. Well, joining us to kind of sum up all of this, we're pleased to welcome back to the program Bill Raggio. He's editor and publisher of the Long War Journal on the web at longwarjournal.org. Bill, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Now, we haven't chatted in a while, and I understand you're planning on another trip to, which is it? One of the two, right?
I'm going to Iraq. I just got approved my embed to go to Mosul, so I should be there in about a week and a half.
All right. Well, let's talk about what's going on in Iraq, because as mentioned, some good news on the stability side. And this business with Turkey, though, let's start with that. Is there reason for concern about what this Turkish incursion, the impact it might have?
Yeah, you know, I think there's reason to be concerned, but this isn't the first Turkish incursion. There's been strikes and sort of limited incursions probably over the last, 4 to 6 months on a limited scale. This one today, it seemed to have a larger force size. I mean, Turkish television was saying anywhere from 10,000 to 3,000 troops. The U.S. military is saying no more than a couple of hundred. You know, coupled with artillery and some airstrikes, you know, this really isn't anything new. You know, obviously the Kurds are concerned because they're concerned about the Turkish attempts to destroy, Kurdish independence. The Turks are concerned, rightfully so, about the PKK terrorists conducting attacks in the country. And then they're, concerned about, the Kurds declaring a regional state and breaking off pieces of Turkey for their state. But in the end, I think what's going on here, I think that there's sort of been this nod and a wink between Turkey, the Iraqi government, the U.S., and the Kurdish regional government, which is essentially the Kurdish regional government is the amalgam of the three Kurdish provinces up north and the two large Kurdish political parties. I think that they've agreed that, look, if Turkey goes in and conducts limited raids while being monitored and promising not to stay inside Turkey. I mean, these raids are really occurring at villages and mountainous areas right along the border. They're not going very far into Iraq to conduct these strikes. And so I really think that there's been an agreement for the Turks to do this, but on a limited scale, and just make their hits and get out.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the announcement from Muqtada al-Sadr extending this ceasefire. It certainly puts a lot of power in his hands, and everybody's waiting on edge to see what decision he's going to make. And I suppose he likes being at the center of attention in that sense. But the decision he made, I think, seen as good news, certainly in most quarters. How significant is it?
It's definitely significant news. Look, I've been covering this for quite a long time. The U.S. military and the Iraqi government and the Iraqi military have been applying enormous pressure on Sadr and the Mahdi army and then the Iranian, which are linked to the Iranian-backed special groups, been conducting raids, attacks, arresting Sadr officials. And it really stepped it up over the last month. And they're sending the message to Sadr, saying, hey, that's fine. If you want to cancel this ceasefire, we can have a hot war too. I mean, look, the Iraqi government has the option of declaring the Mahdi army illegal and declaring the Sadrist political movement, which, while it pulled out of the government, still has, about 30 seats of significant representation in the Iraqi parliament. They could be declared illegal. So everyone looked at, I think that the whole look at this was wrong. Everyone looked at Sadr acting from a position of strength. From my opinion, and I've stated this several times in the past, I always felt he was going to reinitiate the ceasefire. That was his best option here. Sadr, if he had, and for the reasons I had mentioned, now, look, there's a classic line, I believe it was in The Godfather, when Don Corleone is sitting in the meeting and he agrees to a ceasefire, and he swears on the lives of his children that he will not be the one to break the ceasefire. And when he you know, leaves the meeting, his son Michael comes up and says to him, he says, you know, isn't that a sign of weakness? And Don Corleone, the godfather, says to him, he says, it is weakness. I mean, that's exactly the same thing going on here. Sadr is not conducting a ceasefire from a position of strength. He's doing it from a position of weakness.
Now let's talk about the region you're going to be heading to, Mosul. You know, and we've heard all the stories about the progress in places like Ramadi and Fallujah. Much of this Al-Qaeda insurgency seems to be based largely in Mosul. It almost seems to be a last stand there. What's the situation?
Sure. And, you know, look, the roots of this actually go back to the surge itself. In order to secure Baghdad, Iraqi army units were stripped from places in the north like Mosul and other areas, because those areas actually were pretty quiet. So Al-Qaeda, what they did, they moved on into these areas, which had also very strong, look, Al-Duri, is it Ibrahim Al-Duri, the leader of the Iraq Revolutionary Council under Saddam Hussein. He swore bayat to Zarqawi. You know, he joined Al-Qaeda. That's where his whole core was based out of the Mosul region. So they have the infrastructure there to reorganize. This is where they are. They've been driven out of Baghdad, largely out of the regions in the belts areas around southern, eastern, western, and northern Baghdad. And they're organizing in this Mosul region and the area sort of in this triangle region from Mosul to Kirkuk and an area called the Hawija, just in northern Salahuddin province. And Al-Qaeda, you know, the Iraqi government is saying this is going to be the last stand for Al-Qaeda. I don't think that it's quite that dramatic, but Al-Qaeda is running out of places to regroup. And, you know, the entire Sons of Iraq, which is formerly the CLC, or Concerned Local Citizen Program, which is part, you know, analogous to the Awakening movement that occurred in Anbar province, has spread throughout Iraq. Al-Qaeda is running out of places to go. And look at the, you know, last year at this time, we were talking about winning or losing Baghdad. This year, we're looking at Mosul in the far north.
Yeah.
That's a significant change in the security situation. And I, you know, one of the things I look back to with the surges is, what if we had gotten the full 60,000 troops that the Keene-Kagan plan called for? Look, I don't think that Al-Qaeda would have had the opportunity to try and regroup in Mosul if we could have put in the full surge package like the Keegan-Kane plan called for. But that being said, the Iraqis are taking a lot of this on their own. Sorry to go on there.
Yeah, well, no, and that's an important point to make. And I suppose it's relevant to the Afghanistan question, too. I know there's 3,000 Marines that are coming into southern Afghanistan, into Kandahar province. It's kind of a short-term sort of situation, but I think welcome on the part of the Canadians. Are there still the resources in Afghanistan? Or what's the concern about making sure that NATO is able to hold this coalition together and maybe get some more nations involved?
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, the situation is definitely analogous with it. It's pertinent in Afghanistan as well. There needs to be more troops. NATO and the U.S. have gone on the cheap in Afghanistan. Same population, probably a more spread out country than Iraq, and yet they have maybe a third the forces there. That 3,000 U.S. troops, as you said, is going to be a welcome addition. It's a limited, it's a 7-month deployment. They'll be coming in for the fighting season, coming in around March and leaving in late fall of next year. The Marine Corps is definitely hot and heavy to take this on. But the rest of NATO, I'm talking outside of Canada, and I think the Dutch have pulled, you know, you can argue against the Dutch and the Danes' counterinsurgency tactics. That's a different story. But they've made the commitment and put their troops in combat, in the harm. And the same thing with the Brits. They've made a commitment to the region. But the rest of NATO is just not willing to deploy to the combat zone. I mean, France is discussing sending another 700 troops to the region, possibly, but they may put them in Kabul. Germany will not do it. I mean, this is really a disgrace. I mean, NATO wants, the Europeans and NATO want to be a global power and influence power globally, but they don't act like it, because they won't commit forces to Afghanistan. And I can't understand how they do not see how Afghanistan threatens them. You know, Al-Qaeda and the Taliban reemerging in Afghanistan threatens them just as much as it threatens the United States. It threatens the entire West. and they need to step up to the plate. NATO is on the verge of becoming irrelevant. Even Secretary Defense, U.S. Secretary of Defense Gates said this, and he discussed just, I believe it was today or yesterday, of talking about NATO is becoming a two-tier system, and he didn't really go into that, but what he's talking about is he's talking about the people in NATO that are willing that have the political and military will and are committing to the fight, and you know, those that are essentially free-riding here.
Yeah, well, and, you know, it's been a controversial issue here. I mean, you look at the polls, there's division over remaining in Afghanistan, but when it's posed as a hypothetical, if NATO's willing to step up, more NATO troops are sent in, there's a lot more support here for the mission. So it's, you know, it's putting a lot of military strain on Canada, also a lot of political strain, too.
Yeah, absolutely, as well it should. I mean, and the fact that the rest of NATO will not step up is putting an enormous amount of pressure on the Dutch and on the Danes and the Canadians and on the British political systems, because rightfully so, the people are asking, why should we shoulder the whole burden? This is a military alliance that should share the dangers and the spoils equally, and we are not seeing that in Afghanistan at all. And by them doing this, they're threatening to cause the withdrawal of the fighting partners, which would essentially, and if this happens, would leave the U.S. and probably the British alone in southern Afghanistan.
Yeah. Well, we'll leave it on that jury note, Bill. Hopefully it doesn't turn out that way. Longwarjournal.org, again, is the website. Bill, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to speak to you, Rob.
All right. Bill Raggio, longwarjournal.org. It is The World Tonight. We're back after this.